Okay. There's some kind of maintenance going on the chat. But anyway, good evening, everybody. And I think you can hear us. It's 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday night. And we're studying the work of E.J. Gold called The Hidden Work. And it's a book that we've been working with for several months. And at this point, we are on chapter 14 of 15. And this, I believe, is our third class on chapter 14. Chapter 14 is a unique chapter. If you look at the arc of the book and the reasoning that the author goes through in the book, he starts out positing this idea of something called a prayer absolute. And then he develops it out over the next 10 chapters, and then he gives us the prayer absolute in chapter 11, and then he relates it into the octave in 12, and 13 he begins to expand into other arenas. And then in 14 he says, what's the name of chapter 14, Ivan?
Wait, let me look it up. You mean angelic choirs.
And so in chapter 14, suddenly we leave the planet behind, and he actually says, now we're going to study the concept of angelic choirs. But it is such an interesting manner in which he's doing it. And we have begun to form choirs, and individuals have gone on and looked at page 149 of that chapter, and they've selected a particular choir that they feel they're part of. That's all they did. There wasn't any study. You just scan it. And with your sensing, you choose a particular choir. What an event that has been, because people have wound up in places that are winding up being just right for them. Just right for them. It's such an interesting experiment so far. And we're starting with the idea that we don't really know what an angel is, or if there is such a thing as a disembodied entity. But we're starting with the idea that, hey, let's work with the premise that there is, and see, in fact, what does happen with that. And we're getting some fascinating results. And different groups are meeting at different times. So we're going to continue on the chapter, and the reason for that is because it's very useful for us to understand. It's going to be helpful to read the chapter to understand how to approach the gathering of data within our angelic choir groups. There are 5 active choirs now. The 7 halls for this particular round of this particular book, Ivan, the six and seven halls are not covered. And that's okay. That's okay. So, Ivan, can you get us started? And go ahead and reread the header of the chapter, and that'll give us an idea of context. It's important to understand the context in which we're doing all of this work. It's not a matter of just reading data.
Angelic choirs. Angel training is a method of drawing down the higher mental, emotional, and moving postures from one of the angelic beings who is already in the work, so that by observation we may practice these work methods and form an angelic work identity with one of them.
Okay, so I'm going to start us off where we stopped last week, which was at the very bottom of page 146. And I'm going to read the last paragraph we actually read.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we'll continue. So where we stopped and we read was, angel training is a cunning method of drawing down the essential qualities of one of the higher beings in the work, performing their work in higher dimensions so that we may practice these work methods and form an angelic work identity with one of the angelic workers. So that's a bold statement, right?
Yeah.
It's a bold statement. And he goes on to say, the work of each of the higher dimensions requires a new and unique initiation. The work of each of the higher dimensions requires a new and unique initiation, because the work data for the next ascending dimension dawns upon one very slowly, long after the previous work has been mastered. Okay, so what we're talking about there is that we're now actively using the concept of initiation, of the initiate, creating a space through initiation. Mm-hmm. We're creating a particular invocational space, right? The invocation, then it says something here. It says, the essential qualities of one of the higher beings in the work. Okay, so we go to page 149. Wow, there's a list of seven choirs and several of these rulers of these various halls. So that begins to imply the fact that these rulers are, in fact, some of these, what I'm going to call here, one of the higher beings in the work. And so part of the work of the individual choirs that are now working together is to attempt to create an atmosphere such that there's at least a little bit of a communication of what that angelic being might be like. So each group will come up with some way of presenting to the group. This will not be an academic exercise, which I'm going to be demonstrating in a few minutes. Does that make sense then, how I'm presenting it?
Yeah, I think so.
These initiations into the work of higher dimensions, and this is very interesting, this next phrase, these initiations into the work of higher dimensions cannot be transmitted by oral information university style. This is not a data dump. Rather, these initiations can be acquired only by higher use of attention, and here's the kicker, concentrated in the most intense study of the human biological machine while it is temporary under the influence of the work of the higher dimensions. So tell me what that means. Dan has it.
David, it means we have to know what our machine is like all by itself.
Okay, so we have to know what our machine is like, but what it's implying here, Tianzhou, is that we are in this initiative space, right, this invocation. And then this interesting phrase, concentrated intense study of the human of the biological machine while under that influence. So what does your self-observation like when you're in that invocational space? That flips the whole concept of how this study should take place. Rather than trying to get knowledge about, linear knowledge about these various angels, Raphael and Sandalphon and Gabriel and so on, what we're doing is, how am I responding to it?
Reflection.
What did he say?
Dan says it's by reflection.
Okay, by reflection of what?
If the HBM is a mirror, then whatever influence it's under is what it's going to reflect. That's what this passage suggests, I believe.
Absolutely it does.
That's well said. It's like saying to study the work. I would study the manifestation of my machine in under the influence of the work, or in this atmosphere of the work.
Okay. So we now, in HBM, in the book HBM, we've studied a lot about the mechanics of the HBM, how to do that kind of self-observation. Now it's implying this other thing. What a surprise it was when I read this again a couple of weeks ago. So we're not like oh gosh, what does Sandalphon look like? You know, what is Anahel, what color are Anahel's shoes? Or, the quote, the idea is, what does my machine tend to do when in that space of initiation? Remember the phrase, how can I put myself in a position such that my transformation is a necessity for the world to work? It's right here. Right? How are we doing on comments?
Simon, can you hear me, David?
Yes, very clearly.
Okay. Simon says, temporarily under the influence is an interesting tip. And then Jim goes on to say, we use the HBM to detect when we shift into angelic chambers.
Is Mark on right now? Mark
yeah, and Mark responds to that by saying, or perhaps that the study of our HBM is enhanced by the assisting factor of the influence.
It's a mutual beneficial environment, Mark. I'm going to share what you shared earlier in the afternoon. Is that okay with you, Mark, and that I share that? Does he say yes?
Yes.
Thank you. So Mark said, Mark is in the second hall. In the second hall, the protector is Raphael. And that group met for the first time this afternoon, and Mark comes to me and he says, you know what? I didn't spend any time on it. I didn't study it. I forgot to read anything. I didn't really do anything. But I decided to go out, practice with this idea of I don't know, and I went out into the world, and he just went out with that intention. Okay? Very interesting concept. He went out with the intention and what I call, he went out with a moment of sacrifice and surrender. He went out with a, in the moment of surrender. And he said that he didn't know what happened, but he got hit by something, an energetic, that in observing his human biological machine was a different thing that was Raphael. Okay. Did I get that about right, Mark? So, how does this work? Yeah, that's okay.
He hasn't responded yet.
So, that's the method that we're going to use, and then continue. And what good would the most intense study of the machine be under these conditions if we did not already know ourselves? By which I mean, if we had not already studied the machine and its mental, emotional, and moving activities under normal conditions, we've been doing that for 3 years. We've been doing that for 4 years with practical work on self, HBM, life in the labyrinth, joy of sacrifice. Okay, we've been studying the machine. What does my machine look like when I'm out in the world? Okay? Now we have this special circumstance. We must be able to know what is different about the machine when it is acting under the influence of beings of higher dimensions. And for this, we must know the machine under ordinary conditions. In order to learn anything new, we must know what is common to the machine to begin with. Use the machine for the study of another higher being. We must already know the machine as it is, objectively, impartially, as an appraiser is able to study the object under appraisal. We must know ourselves. 147. Middle, fourth paragraph now. We can study the activities of the warden angels of the seven celestial choirs by observing their activities while we are under the influence of their being. When we are under the influence of our actions, when we are under their influence, our actions will closely resemble their actions. It is only necessary to invoke their presence upon ourselves and, while under their influence, observe their manifestations closely. Mark, is that true?
He's not sure, he said. Laugh out loud.
Okay. That's okay.
But he did say that, just a little while ago, that in response to your first question to him, if you got it right, he said, pretty much so.
Good. So we'll continue to, but it's a point of study. That's the whole point of this experiment with the choirs here. We're experimenting to see what it is we're going to wind up with. And in a sense, we're going to put ourselves in the way of their influence. And we do that through the use of intention and surrender. These are the tools that we're going to bring forth. Okay? Go ahead.
One thing that has stood out to me very clearly is that whatever may happen as I put myself into this space when I'm by my alone, or just going about my everyday life, which is pretty much like that, it's much different when we're in the space together with our fellow voyagers. The signature, the experience, the sensations are distinctly different and more powerful. So that the influence of the angelic presence is much more pronounced. It's magnified by having it in a group setting.
We're not ready to leap into the area to say, well, I now know what Sandalphon is like. I now know Raphael. We don't need to do that yet, because our task now is to observe our machines when under the influence of those higher spaces. Read the paragraph at the top of 140. So when we're under those influences, what is the machine like? Do we observe, and this is an interesting question, Silverdale, can we observe a different tonality in the vibratory sensation of what we're calling the essential self? So now the question is there a discernment that can begin to be made just in variations of that tonal quality, maybe, is the way to put it.
Yeah, unquestionably, the way I've experienced it over the past several years is that our essential self, the way I explain it to myself based on my experiences, is that when we begin, our essential self is so diffused, or the attention of our essential self is so diffused that we don't even cognize that we have a vibratory sensation. Gradually, over time, as we pacify our human biological machine, we discover our essential self begins to coalesce or come back into a more of a concentrated state. And in association with that is a discernible vibratory sensation, which, again, over time, through continued exercise, actually does increase. That the intensity of that attention of the essential self that begins to take predominance over the human biological machine. What that all means, I'm not quite sure, but
what you're saying is that you are having a growing certainty as to discern between the human biological machine and the vibratory sensation of the essential self. Is that fair to say?
Unquestionably.
No question.
And perhaps that actually is what angel training is all about.
I that's exactly where we're headed. Okay. Is now we're leaving the realm of how does my human biological machine interact. For instance, some of us are meeting on Tuesday afternoon, in the mornings in Second Life, and Tani is doing a class on practical work on self on Chapter 2, and we're going to stay on Chapter 2 for a few weeks. There's so much in it. So the idea is that you go in there. What is Chapter 2? That's the pond exercise. What is the pond exercise? Oh, I see. I'm having a reaction to Peter's leaving tomorrow, and I'm having a reaction about that. You know, and you say, well, I got to leave, and da 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 da. Well, if I react to that, I call that an emotion. It isn't an emotion, it's just a reaction. It's not an emotion, but if we can work to open the waters or part the Red Sea, something different can happen. All right? That's studying how my machine works in the world, my jealousies, my fears, all of that. And there are techniques to work with that machine to pacify it so that something else can happen called the development of the essential self. Now, this author is saying, you know what? You're no longer in middle school. We're going to assume that you're ready for the next level here. So not only are we developing the enhancing the presence of the vibratory sensation of the essential self, but now we're going to work with the discernment while we are there. Does this make sense?
And David, I'd like to also simply remind all of us of the story of Red Fen. He's swimming around in an aquarium. He's rushing to and fro. The question that EJ poses to us is, can Red Fen readjust his vision so he's able to look through the glass into the higher dimensions of the world that supports his, and that's
right.
Very much a picture of what we're trying to do, look through the glass. Well, that means we have to be able to disarm the thoughts, feelings, and manifestations of our physical body in order to facilitate the essential self looking out into the higher dimensions.
Precisely. Nicely put. Nicely put.
Very nice.
So I'm going to share some anecdotes. Right now we say, oh, you know, we're in this, the invocation of the Wednesday night group. 12, 13, 14 people were here. and that's a good thing, right? It's a good thing. It's nourishing the essential self. It feels like it's nourishing the essential self. So now when we go to the next level called angel training, now we're going to be looking at the potential of focusing on different shades of that. For instance, being in a space and the guide says, this space is called, listen, this space is called, I am my brother's keeper. Right? Or that's somebody saying, now this space is called this, or now this space is called that. So we're already beyond, gosh, we were had an invocation. Now we're in the level of discerning the distinctions between different spaces. Has anybody here done the perfumes, the essential oils? Tamara said she has. You, of course, have. Did you ever hear of the essential oils? Yeah, fascinating to work with. What they are is they are pure essences. And we did this for a long time where someone could come to the booth and you'd make a blend for them. Someone would come up and you go, well, you know what? How about this? Oh, wait a minute. I think I'm going to put a little bit of this there and a little bit of that. And suddenly they go, wow, that's really interesting how we put this stuff together. And you'd write it down so you had the formula, because that person knew that something had been hit. Selling the jewelry is the same thing. You brought up the point a couple of days ago about the entrepreneurial work. It's not as simple as just doing a business. It's doing it in these manners too. And so that is, in a sense, giving to others the sense of what that particular invocation is. That's the purpose of the choirs. Okay? You're in a choir, right?
Mm-hmm.
What choir are you in?
Third.
Third hall. Choir. Third hall. And that particular group, is Susan on?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Susan. Greetings.
Hi, I'm just quiet today.
Good, that's okay. I'm glad you're here. And that group, and Badir, I don't know if she's on. And this and Ivan, they come up with extraordinary experiences in a very short amount of time. And there's passion behind their investigation. And they're not sitting there like biblical scholars or Hasidic.
They might.
You might at some point, but right now they're sitting just, they're in a sense just allowing the invocation to come through. And I believe that both Susan and Vadir have come up with unique elements about this particular angel. So then in a week or two or three, they're going to knock on the door of our classroom. They're going to say, okay, here is that third hall.
Mm-hmm.
Here I'd like to introduce to you the Archangel Anahel. And they will attempt to do it. And they will give us the hint of it. What does it smell like? What's the odor of that particular space? That's the work we're talking about now in angel training, is being in the depths of the essential self and going one step further and getting a sense of that particular space. Believe me, you are able to do that.
David, Mark has something that dovetails with what you just said.
Go ahead, please.
Said, I had said something like, okay, Raphael, I don't know what is going on, but I am opening myself to you. And there was an almost immediate sense of something very big and very immediately responsive. It was wonderful, but totally unexpected and somewhat overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. We're purposely not... somebody asked in the class this afternoon, you know, well, what are the rituals that you should do to invoke this particular entity? And we're particularly not going that route. I can open up 20 books and find a particular invocation for the angel Huzia under the first choir, or Shal Mial in the third choir, and so on. There are probably rituals and invocations from those. We're not taking that route. We're taking another route of organic investigation and having faith in our essential selves that we're going to be able to recognize something. There's a reason you picked healing. That's what I want to get to. That's what's exciting. There's a reason that right now, in the last 2 weeks, that you did it. Okay?
Well, and I just found myself talking to my angel.
Okay.
Well, I think the key to this invocation, at least the way we want to do it, is in the paragraphs David just read over, actually, because the for me to observe my human biological machine under the influence of this work entity,
mm-hmm.
you know, or this work identity, I need to see it in the circle of the choir. I need to see it in the
That's
circle
right.
of people, which is even on an as-if basis invoking this angel. You know, even if we were saying, suppose we could invoke this angel, this is how we would do it. And then, you know, then I could say, okay, supposing that we were invoking this angel and supposing that the angel were present or somehow in contact with us, now I can observe my machine under this influence.
Correct.
You know, and I think it's worth doing, this is an experiment. I mean, so it's worth doing even on an as-if basis.
Correct.
Even on a, and I hate to say speculative because we're not being Hasidic, but experimental is better in view of the next chapter that some of us are already delving into.
Let me tell you
like
how.
Like a laboratory
experiment
situation. Yeah.
Let me tell you how I view this. When the reason it came to me literally about 3 weeks before the end of chapter 13, how to approach it. I saw the choir thing. That's what hit me.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that we couldn't approach it in any other way but totally intuitively. Just intuitively pick it. Now, I believe, my belief is that those individuals have picked those choirs because they are the courier between this group and that angelic presence. They're the courier, and I'm going to hand that to you, and then you're going to bring me back a message, a thought, a sensation, I don't know what, but something, because the couriers in four, Michael, they all independently picked that. That's why I didn't go, well, gosh, who do you want to work with? And then we'll go that way. Everybody independently sent an email, and then I introduced you to your choir. Because those individuals in choir number 4 in the fourth hall are couriers for that particular powerful fourth choir. Right? That's how we're going to serve each other, too. We can serve each other. And people have signatures, and that's what we're bringing to the table together. Okay? Make sense? Okay. In order to learn anything new, we must learn what is common to the machine to begin with. To use the machine for the study of another higher being, we must already know the machine as it is, objectively and partially, as an appraiser is able to study the object under appraisal. We must know ourselves. Remember that in about 3 paragraphs. We can study the activities of the warden angels of the seven celestial choirs by observing their activities where we are under the influence of their beings. So that's the discernment here, okay? That's the discernment that we're looking for. And then as Ivan pointed out, to go to the next paragraph, of course, our own manifestations must not be active, which is to say the mechanical manifestations of the machine must not dominate our activities during these invocations of presences belonging to and working in higher dimensions. Now, take note of this next phrase. It is taken for granted that we have studied our machines and we know them well enough to be able to use discernment to separate the manifestations of the machine from manifestations not belonging to the machine, which would be those manifestations we would be interested in studying. At the same time, the mechanical moods and thoughts of the machine must also be put aside for the duration of that invocation. And over the, like when we were doing Joy of Sacrifice, we talked a lot about protocol in the chamber, right? We talked about having a particular protocol within the chamber. You know what behavior is inappropriate, correct? And even if that comes up in you, even if it comes up in you, you know, I look at Dan over there, you know, and get upset and all that. The point is, it's inappropriate in the chamber. So that's what's meant by that. Right? You know your machine well enough to know that you're having a reaction there. And it takes practice. It just takes practice. That's a lot about what we're talking about. So it's put aside for the duration of the invocation. We can learn a great deal about the work of higher dimensions and prepare ourselves mentally, emotionally, and actively for this work, if only the manifestations of the machine, including its automatic thoughts and emotions, can be quieted down for a while. Okay? We're getting to a point where it's just, can you set it aside? And we can, right? We were able to. We can begin immediately the invocation of angelic wardens of the seven celestial halls, if only we know who they are. Study everything you can to find out about them, and by mimicry of their individual characteristics and unique attributes, draw them down over yourself till you feel yourself to be under their influence, while at the same time divesting yourself of all the usual manifestations of your own machine, its behavior, thoughts, and emotions. So he's just pounding the same idea in, right? Mm-hmm. Paragraph over paragraph. There's a discernment between your regular manifestations and hanging out in that invocation. That's the prize that he's talking about. Tamara. The question that Tamara is raising, why is EJ using the term angelic wardens? Does anybody have an answer for her? Any of the groups that are working or meeting have worked so far, have they addressed this question?
Aren't they keeping everything in line?
Like a game warden.
Okay, what does a game warden do, Janet?
Like a game warden or a jail warden.
What do they do?
They keep things in line.
Supervise.
They keep things in line.
They watch a certain area.
Go ahead.
Well, a warden supervises all the lieutenants under, you know, all the various other administrative activities under his authority. He's the president of the corporation, I guess, or of the jail.
The CEO.
Manager.
And what's the job of the CEO? Is to keep the business entity in line with the vision of the board of directors and the shareholders. So why is a particular CEO hired for Google or Microsoft or Apple, these big, giant, powerful things that are out there? Why are those particular individuals hired, let's say? Why was Eric Schmidt the CEO of Google for so long? No longer.
To give it a signature.
He does give it his own signature, but he's also, the major shareholders realize he can do the job of preserving the vision of this particular corporation. Does that make sense? Okay. So what was it? What would a warden be of an angelic hall? It's not in terms of, it's not the same kind of will that we talk about with the machines. It's, and I posed this question to a couple of the choirs. I posed the question of why is that particular warden in that particular hall? Is it because they just happened to be there? They got the job. Their dad was there first. Each
David,
hall. Go ahead, Harry.
I was just going to say, could it not be that the warden angels maintain the vibrational signature of that function that would best harmonize the whole group?
Maybe one way to look at it is that a hall, a celestial hall, has a celestial function. That there's a function that each one represents. Okay? What if that was the case? Each one is like, has kind of a particular function. And wouldn't you want somebody in there that knows how to perform the function of that hall being properly maintained and expressed? So maybe you can study it from the point of view of function rather than control.
Well, you say in the choir that choir leader is going to be a conductor. So that warden or leader of a choir is responsible for the harmony. Coordination, the coordination of the harmony of that choir.
There's a hall and there's cells that go down the hall.
And angels. So, I know EJ is usually very
in. Yeah, but I think you need to consider expanding your definition. It's not you're in jail. The word warden doesn't just isn't just a lawman as such. A warden is someone, I think, also that is caretaking a functionality. So would you not have lieutenants around you that more properly can do that?
You know, David, Mark Roach has come up with an excellent dictionary definition from the dictionary. An official charged, and we might think of post, right? Each of these angels occupies a post, so the post of a particular warden of a particular hall. But anyway, back to Mark Roach's definition. An official charged with special supervisory duties or with the enforcement of specified laws or regulations.
Okay.
Can also mean a guardian or a guide. And I think that's pretty encompassing, supervisory duties and enforcement of specified laws or regulations.
There are seven celestial halls in this context, and each one fulfills one of the arenas of the heavenly hosts. It's doing something that is of celestial importance. And so look to your angels and the angel groups to see, well, what is the hall the angel will help to find the hall, and the hall will help to find the angel. Okay? That might give you a hint as to how to proceed, too. What is that hall that Raphael?
Doesn't the hall lead to the heavens?
The pantheon of the celestial spheres, each hall is a specific region or formulation of heaven. They're different. They're not all the same. So each heaven is slightly different than the other. So Raphael will be different than Anahel. Then the halls to which they are wardens will be different.
There seems like in the research that we've been doing, and I don't know about the other choirs, but there's all this set of correspondences in speaking about these angels. And so, you know, I got the idea already from looking at Anahel in the third hall that there will be some correspondence of either these halls or the angelic rulers of the halls or different angels in the halls, qualities of the halls with the Sephiroth, of which there are 10 Sephiroth instead of 7. But, you know, there's in reading about these angels, there's all kinds of correspondences to these other diagrams and other systems of sort of cosmic maintenance or cosmic functions. Anyway, I also think of the halls, I think it might be worth looking as we read the rest of this chapter, looking for the evidence that I believe a choir or hall of angel is not a passageway. It's a convocation. I think of it as a hall like a concert hall. There might be 7 halls that are like 7 floors of the Philharmonic Music Building, or like the in the Paradiso, like Dante going through, they're like these in some way concentric circles of harmony. You know, there's a vibrational level or a singing that's going on in this circle. And then to move to the next choir, it's necessary to change that, you know, change the numbers, in a sense, to go looking ahead a chapter, to change the numbers and the vibrational signature and the harmony and so on for the next choir.
Hey, Dave, I'd like to throw out a startling thought to everybody for everybody's consideration.
Thank you.
You know, since the subject of the book is prayer absolute, and chapter 11, we're actually given the prayer absolute, starting with, in motion bowing, my presence comes to thee. I ask the question whether these 7 wardens actually correspond to the 7 steps of prayer absolute, in which case, in motion bowing, my presence comes to thee, corresponds to the first ruler, Gabriel, and perhaps various aspects of that post. And then to just kind of back up that suggestion, if you look on page 145, the first necessity for the production of prayer absolute is to set apart special chambers for the directing and outpouring of higher force from its great reservoir. And then the beginning of the next paragraph, through the ceremony of prayer absolute, a wave of higher force is passed into the phenomenal world, which has a slow, indirect evolutionary influence. So just a suggestion.
So choirs, study that as a possibility then. Does the third line correspond at all to Anahel, for instance?
Mm-hmm.
Or possible. And this would be original work. This is not out there in the scholarly compilations of these various studies.
Well,
talked about this in the group with Raphael. And what line is that?
The second line.
And what choir are you on? You're in the second choir? That's what you just said?
Yes.
And then that's just... Wait a minute. Is this rigged? Is this rigged?
Yeah, and the third is with clear mind, my presence comes to know thee.
Which we can understand a little bit about Anna Hell. And that came up, George, by the way.
Oh.
Spontaneously, you know, I did not pepper the waters, okay?
Very good.
I knew you had that thought, but I didn't bring it up. Two people in the group said that independently was the line they most responded to, and both of them also said they chose Raphael for particular reasons.
Oh.
So that's the kind of accident that I want to study, but just keep your minds open to, what do you trip on? What do you trip over now that you've opened your mind to Gabriel? What do you wind up running into?
Right.
Or the sandal phone people. He's a tall angel.
Sandal phone.
Known as a tall angel, by the way, among other things.
We've renamed him Saint Dolphin, son of Poseidon.
So I'm just going to read a couple more paragraphs, and then we're going to close it down for tonight. The chapter, it's important to read and reread the chapter because there's so many clues in here about how to do your choir work. Mm-hmm. And we're going through it linearly, and I'm picking stuff out, but the whole chapter says it's all there. So like where we just read, study everything you are able to find out about your wardens. And by mimicry of their individual characteristics and unique attributes, draw them down over yourself till you feel yourself to be under their influence. While at the same time divesting yourself of the usual manifestations of your machine, then using the fullest possible force of attention, even talking hypnagogically, to a scribe who can write down your observations, watch them at work. What is that exercise? How would you do that then? I don't get it. Then using the fullest possible force of attention, even talking hypnagogically to a scribe who can write down your, watch them at work. What's he trying to tell us here, Ivan?
Channeling. It's sort of like the realists, you know, doing a lot of writing.
I don't think there's anything.
It's like sleepwalking.
It is that. There's nothing wrong with channeling. It's just how it got commercialized and used that makes it bad. My point is that we can allow yourself in a certain way to be in a trance state. Mark, when he was stumbling around Los Angeles, was in a bit of a trance state. That's okay. There's also what I call active acquiescence or active surrender. But active, I mean, it's just powerful attention to be on it, but holding yourself in surrender to that vibratory force that you are inviting. I'm just going to read this last paragraph and then we'll call it. Apprentice yourself to them in this way by allowing your biological machine to be intensely follow their activities and at the same time intensely observe the machine while under the influence. Here he is repeating it again and again and again. Now, Simon is a musician,
And Simon, what instrument did you play? I think you told me once, but are you still there? Is this still on? What instrument did you play, Simon? Or have you played? I know you played several, but
bass and guitar.
Bass and guitar.
Bass and guitar. So do you think you can transmit to me the manner in which to play the bass by conversation? In other words, we could get on Skype, right? And you can just give me a lecture on bass playing, and then pretty much I'll be able to play the bass. People have skeptical looks on their face, and people are sniggering.
What does Simon say?
Yes.
He says yes?
He says yes.
We all here are thinking not bloody likely.
Because what would I? At some point I might have to actually pick up the bass,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that might be significant.
Learning how to play it.
Yeah.
Like I have a friend who's a very skilled karate practitioner. Do you think I could learn by him giving me a lecture about it? Maybe read a book. That's what I should do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Read a couple of books. What do you need to do?
Practice.
Copy the physiology.
Practice.
We are in a position now. We're fortunate enough to be with a group of individuals where we're willing to practice on something that is unheard of. I'm not ever hearing people working in this manner together. So unique what we have before us and the opportunity to work like this with choirs and discover stuff, but you gotta do it. You gotta do something together. You gotta practice it and be bold enough to think, yeah, I can hang out there. Bring that data back. I'm much more interested in that than a scholarly report on Archangel Michael.
Dan says that he thinks Oscar Wilde said that if given a choice between going to heaven and going to a lecture about heaven, most people would choose to go to the lecture. That's like taking the map for the territory.
That's right. And what we're doing is we're saying, let's walk into that territory. Let's get on the mat and start doing the karate. Let's pick up that bass and start practicing it. And guess what? We'll be about as good doing it in our first attempts as if I was going to start learning the alto sax tomorrow, which I've never picked up in my life. I don't know music at all. And I'd be pretty scary. That's about how good we'll be here, okay? But we're not without tools. And we're not without the ability to learn. If we bring our intention, a sense of surrender and openness to this, we might be able to learn a little something together. And then each group can then share with each other. And we can learn from each other in that way too. Make sense?
Sure.
Yes.
What else you got there, Harry, on the log? Anything?
Not a whole lot. Actually, there's been very little this evening. Simon went on to say there is a mechanical aspect and there is an experience-knowledge aspect. But in one class, you can learn to play it. And then Simon goes on to say, I guess the same thing applies to the invocation of archangels.
I would say so. Several of us have skills in certain areas, and those skills took 20, 30 years, 35 years to develop. That's okay. It's worth the stretch here. It really is. It's worth the stretch. This is a good one. So,
Simon did say that motor might be a better word than mechanical. A motor function.
Well, how about moving center? You know,
that would be. I think that's what he's getting at.
Okay.
Go through the motions, let's say, of learning something, but then there's a lot more to it.
Simon agrees with you, Ivan.
Okay. Well, I think, go ahead, Ivan.
Yeah.
That's it. That's, I think, all we have for tonight. I'm hoping that the groups are continuing to meet and finding times when they can meet together. And we'll look at joining each other again next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock and continue our explorations.
All right.
Thank you and good night.
Hey, thanks, Dave and Ivan.
Thank you three, for being on the phone and helping.
Thank you.